Blog Talk Radio.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
And you know that. It's that time again. 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on the East Coast where I sit at. This is the Master Plan. My name is JT, a.k.a. the Master. And this is the number to call in. It's 347-637-3220. Listen to a little bit of the Sade. This song is about 20 years old. We have a chat room. The chat room is open. Come join me. Talk about whatever you want to talk about. We're going to be talking about some NBA. We're going to be talking about some NFL. We're going to be talking about some fantasy. We're going to be talking about a pedophile that finally got his just due. I'm talking about the Jerry Sandusky case. But let me gather my thoughts, get myself together, listen to a little Sade, and I'll be right back. Like I said, this is the Master Plan, and I'm JT, and we're going to be jumping right into it without further ado. It's me and you on this wonderful Sunday morning on the East Coast. It's been sweltering for a few days. It's a nice day, today, but the day's early. We'll see what happens. Well, we know what happened a few days ago, on Friday, to be specific. Mr. Jerry Sandusky, the monster, is held accountable, and his sex abuse victims are heroes for testifying. That's the headline that I'm going to read from an article from Sports, from Yahoo.com, to start this thing off. I know people are getting pounded by Jerry Sandusky and things like that. But before I even read this article, a few months back, a show called the Young Turks on the Young Turks Network talked about what the lawyer of Jerry Sandusky had as a what they call a hygiene defense. Now, just listen to this. It's about 3 minutes long, give or take. Just listen to what was said from a lawyer coming out with this. Just listen to this.
An update on the Jerry Sandusky story. I know that we don't cover it in great detail. However, every time one of his lawyers makes a massive fool out of himself, we have to bring it up on the show. So it turns out that he has a team of lawyers at this point, which makes sense. And one of those lawyers is a gentleman by the name of Carl Rominger, and he just recently gave a live television interview to a local television station in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And during that interview, he decided that he would defend his client in a very unique way. So let me tell you exactly what he told the local television station. He says, "Some of these kids don't have basic hygiene skills," and he's referring to the victim. Teaching a person to shower at the age of 12 or 14 sounds strange to some people, but people who work with troubled youth will tell you there are a lot of juvenile delinquents and people who are dependent who have to be taught basic life skills, like how to put soap on their body.
Oh.
He's making the argument that Jerry Sandusky was teaching them hygiene skills. He wasn't raping them. He was just teaching them how to put soap on their body. Who are these lawyers? Where does he find them?
Look, there's two layers to this. One is how pathetic an excuse this is.
I know.
I had to teach the kids how to shower. Who in their right mind would believe that? But then even more specifically, I had to teach them how to put soap on their body? Who? Which jury member would go, oh, yeah, obviously this kid didn't know how to put soap on his body, right? That's why I had to rub the soap all over his young body. Come on, what a terrible defense, right? And then secondly, how grotesque it is. Just when you thought you couldn't hate Jerry Sandusky more, well, they found a way to do that. You have to understand, these kids were so poor. You know how poor kids are. They're so dirty that I had to teach them how to shower. They have hygiene problems.
Yeah, it just adds insult to injury. It's like insulting the victims in this case, telling them that they're dirty, that they're poor, they don't know how to clean themselves. It's disgusting. And it's also a horrible strategy because it gives members of the jury an even more, I guess, vivid image of what happened. You don't want them looking or thinking about your client rubbing the alleged victims all over their bodies with soap.
Yeah, it's hideous, man. I mean, think about that, right? First, he picks poor kids to target because he thinks they're more powerless. They're at risk. They don't have anybody to back them up. Mm-hmm. So he victimizes the most powerless kids in the country. They're not only kids, but they're powerless kids. And then when he gets caught raping them, allegedly, then he turns around and blames them for being poor. And he says, you know how dirty these poor kids are. It's really, I mean, he's trying to, I think, make a name for himself as the most hated man in America. And he's doing a pretty good job at it.
Okay. You believe that. That was about 6 months ago that was... and the reason I just brought it up is I hadn't been talking about this case because the nature of the case, for one. Well, basically I'm talking about it now because it's not going to be as prominent in the news as it is now because Mr. Sandusky has been found guilty, and like I said, the monster is held accountable. And his sex abuse victims are heroes for testifying. I'm going to read this article. It's a few pages. And then I'll comment on it after I read it. Juror number four, who happens to be the foreman, gray-haired and middle-aged, who happens to be a man after my own heart because I'm gray-haired and middle-aged, stood high in the back row of the juror's box, looked down at some sheets of paper, then at Jerry Sandusky, and began to deliver a verdict at a long, sad time coming. Three words that were resounded: guilty, guilty, guilty of involuntary deviant sexual intercourse, of indecent assault, of endangering the welfare of children. Three words again: guilty, guilty, guilty of terrorizing the poorest and most vulnerable of this area's youth, of abusing his fame as a former Penn State defensive coordinator, of conducting a charade of charitable work to supposedly help children. Guilty, guilty, guilty. 45 times it rang out. Juror number four hammered each one home with the independent force each one deserved. There was just three charges Sandusky escaped on. And after each of those non-guilty counts, it seemed that the former raised his voice as he returned to this parade of guilty verdicts. He seemed to make sure each count was granted its own moment to linger, to emphasize the torture and pain and shattered innocence it produced. Oral sex, anal sex, fondling, one despicable act worse than the next. This here was a night of redemption, a predator laid bare with nowhere to hide, with no more lies to tell, with no one left to save him. Mr. Sandusky, Judge John Cleland said when this dramatic, nearly 8-minute condemnation was finally fully read. I quote, "You have been found guilty by a jury of your peers." Sandusky, clad in sacks and a brown sport coat, stood mostly motionless throughout, looking up at juror number 4 as the truce was slammed down onto him, as the light was finally and irrevocably cast on his behavior. His left hand was placed casually in his pocket, while behind him his wife Dottie, 3 adopted sons, and an adopted daughter either shook their heads at the jury or openly wept. Moments later, Sandusky gave a quick wave to his family as he was led out by the sheriff's deputies. Judge Cleland will formally sentence him in about 90 days. So, before I finish reading this, he was let out. This happened Thursday or Friday. I think it was Friday. Usually Friday is the sentencing for courts. So that was the 22nd. So 90 days from that. So you're talking July, August, September. So sometime when the football season is beginning for the NFL and for the college, Mr. Sandusky is going to receive his full sentence. He's in jail now. Received his full sentence on how long he's going to spend in jail. Moments. Faces, and that reason why I'm saying that, leading up to this, the 60-year-old faces up to 442 years behind bars, or what might as well be forever and ever some more. His defense attorney, Joe Amendola, hinted at an appeal, but it likely would be fruitless. On the other side of the courtroom, victim number 6, who was an 11-year-old in 1998, was abused by Sandusky in a Penn State locker room shower, an act that was investigated but never prosecuted, laid his head on the top of the bench in front of him, and sobbed uncontrollably. He was soon hugging family members who had joined him. I quote, "I'm just overwhelmed," end quote, he said. Now a grown man, stronger and no longer timid in the face of an old, pathetic coach. Soon reporters were racing out of the courthouse set to break the news of the guilty verdict to a huge throng that had gathered on the steps. And I'm going to play something right after I finish this article on this, okay, because I want to get you people to understand the full crux of this. I want to be able to give the full crux of what took place here. Some reporters were doubted Sandusky was kneeling by then in front of her family trying to provide comfort when the word of the verdict hit the masses. So the wife, to the dying end, the wife stood by her man along with her adopted family, because all the kids that they have are adopted. And supposedly he abused one of his adopted sons, but I can't say that for sure. Supposedly he did. The roaring cheers and screams of joy swept throughout the courthouse door, up the stairs, and into the second-floor courtroom. They startled Dottie, whose head snapped up at the noise, and then sunk down as she realized the people of the center county were celebrating her husband's demise. Sandusky will be held at the local jail until he can be evaluated by the state prison system and assigned accordingly. He is expected to wind up in protective custody, away from the general population, for his own protection. That likely means 23 hours a day in a 6-by-8-foot cell, in other words, a concrete box of hell. He was prepared to go to jail. That was a quote, Amendola said. That was his lawyer. Quote, "mentally prepared. He's not scared. I think given the circumstances of the case and how the trial was going, he knew this was coming." Quote, "this is not a surprise. This is what everyone expected," end quote. Amendola said Sandusky's one regret was not being able to tell his story from the witness stand. His 33-year-old adopted son, Matt, determined during the trial that Jerry abused him as a child. He had made himself available as a prosecution witness. Matt couldn't be called, however, unless the state had introduced the incident on a cross-examination of Jerry Sandusky. It was too much for the defense to risk. This is another quote. Even though Jerry, Dottie, and the other kids deny Matt's allegation, it would have been explosive, end quote, Amendola said. Another quote. There was no way Jerry could testify without Matt being called, end quote. Now, he basically had a nail in the coffin when all these witnesses and all the evidence that he had, that they had, that the prosecution had, that the nail was in the coffin already. It would have been even damning, and it was just to be redundant, I would think, to have Sandusky get on the stand and then also have his adopted son refute anything that he had to say replay his incident of abuse or several or whatever amount of incidents that he had of abuse on the witness stand. So. It wouldn't. Let me put it this way. Basically, they're saying it wouldn't have made a difference. So rather than go through that drama of the Sandusky getting on the stand and then his adoptive son getting on the stand, just let it go. Let that go and see what happens from there. They walked Sandusky out of the back door of the courthouse into a waiting sheriff's vehicle just 50 yards downhill from where they used to hang criminals in the courtyard of the old county jail. Now, that. I understand why the writer put that in there, but I'm not a person of capital punishment. I don't believe in capital punishment. I understand an eye for an eye. You're talking about people who read the Bible and they believe in an eye for an eye. I don't believe in that. It's just my belief. I believe it's more of a torture to put a person in jail for life. Having to think about what they've done and having to deal with prison life for the rest of their lives rather than make it convenient for them by putting them to death, even though they may have caused had a heinous crime, especially murder of whatever kind. I think it's more a mental torture being in jail for an extended period of time than to be snuffed, your life snuffed out with an injection or electrocution or whatever it means that whatever state you're in has for enforcing the death penalty. So let me finish this article. Back then, they'd invite as many people as they could to fit the ring, the gallows, and hear their witness. Those that couldn't gain admission would climb the roofs of local houses to watch the execution from high above in this old, tightly packed Victorian downtown. Now, you know, people who've watched Westerns, Clint Eastwood or John Wayne or whatever, some of these old Westerns, whatever Westerns they had, saw that they always had depictions. If that, it was that type of movie, of a crowd gathering around, whoever is to be executed or hanged gets on the gallows and either says I'm innocent or God help me or forgive me for my sins, and then they pull the lever and the guy falls through the trap door and snaps his neck and he's hanged and he's dead. Well. We're past that. I mean, that was a crude way of getting, I guess, retribution for a person stealing horses or murdering someone. That was retribution. That's the way they did it. That was the 1800s. But things haven't changed so much. Just 5 miles from here, at the Rockview Prison, is the state's execution chamber. And in Bellefonte tradition, a crowd gathered to jeer and scream Friday night behind the courthouse to let their venom ring around Sandusky's head for eternity. Happy Valley indeed. The verdict ended the fallacy that this was an area too devoted to Penn State football to render a fair and proper judgment. The anger at Sandusky was deeper than the outside world could fathom. There may have been a conspiracy to protect Sandusky in the highest levels of Penn State. That will be played out in legal proceedings against university officials, an independent investigation set for the release next month, and the inevitable slew of civil cases to come that will seek to tap into the school's $1.8 billion endowment. None of that represents the rank and file here, not the good people who never hesitated to see Sandusky as a monster and were pained when he seemingly dragged the entire region's reputation down with him. For at least 15 years, Sandusky quietly stalked this idyllic Rockwellian community, preying on its most susceptible boys, using his second-mile charity to meet at-risk kids. He often fostered relationships with the poor, the fatherless, the troubled, or even the simply bored. Now, just like in that clip I had, the most powerless of the in society, poor, parentless, or very poor, or one parent type of kids that are at risk kids. He felt he could wield his most power on them, and he did for 15 years. In one haunting bit of testimony, victim number 4 recounted that he compartmentalized the sexual abuse from Sandusky and endured teasing from classmates who suspected something inappropriate because he had so few plus positives in his life. The chance to leave his little town and troubled home for afternoons hanging around the Penn State football program were enough, he testified. This is a quote. "I thought I didn't want to lose this. This is something good happening to me," end quote, he said. This, time and again, is whom Sandusky chose to target, to trick, to molest, to injure forever. Under the camouflage of mentoring, he stripped them of their innocence and left them in a confused heap in an empty locker room or alone in a dark basement, used and discarded on some creepy waterbed. This is crazy. This is crazy, folks, what I'm reading to you here. During this trial, a parade of victims overcame their own fear and embarrassment to detail, often with chilling testimony through sobs and gasped breath, what Sandusky did to them. They uncovered a hidden side to this bucolic region where not everyone is wealthy and educated and as pure as Penn State's famous white uniforms. They also cried about regret. Victim number 4, now 28, said he wished he'd summoned the courage to come forward sooner and save the younger victims. Victim number 9's mother wept at the memories of sending her son against his wishes to stay with Sandusky because she believed he needed a positive male role model. So this kid didn't want to go, and his mother unknowingly sent him to this guy to be abused. Wow. Imagine how that mother's feeling now, and imagine how scarred the son is toward his mother and toward Sandusky especially. Former Penn State assistant coach Mike McQueary noted that he didn't punch out Sandusky when he discovered him in a shower abusing a boy in 2001, and instead let his university bosses handle the case, which they didn't. A former Penn State police detective conveyed his frustration at not being able to convince the then district attorney to charge Sandusky in 1998. Folks, this is
2012. So like you said, 1998 to now, that's 14 years, but it was taking place before that, so it was 15 years this was going on. It probably was going on longer than that. It just became came to light in a couple incidences. On and on it went, years and years and years, incident after incident after incident, until finally, deep in a warm Friday night, juror number 4 stood up in that box, representing 11 other citizens that had pored over each and every allegation during 21 hours of deliberation and read from those papers. Finally, it was over for Sandusky. Finally, the deception and protection were gone. Finally, this one hulking man, backed by the prestige of Nittany Lion football, propped up by the illusion of charitable work, had nowhere to run, no tale to tell, no one capable of keeping him from facing the awful truth of his life. Guilty, guilty, damn, damn, guilty. Totally agree with that. As the story has unfolded, that going back to 1997-98, he had allegations back there. Police detective wanted to press it forward for some reason. The district attorney, because it was, I quote, Penn State, and he had to be involved with Penn State. That the Penn State fathers didn't want to. In my opinion, didn't want this something like this to come out, and in my opinion, suppressed this for so long, and then probably was forgotten as long as it was not in the forefront, and long as the victims didn't come out, a lot of them were too ashamed to admit what had happened, and that placated to what this monster was doing. For years, and he knew it, and now a famed coach lost his job over it, and then ultimately he passed away shortly after that, which is a shame. I admired Joe Paterno greatly because he was a hell of a person and a hell of a coach. Quite naturally, everybody knows that he dropped the ball on this greatly. He was one of the most powerful men in college football, not just coaches. He was one of the most powerful men in college football that you can't tell me that if he knew about this, and which it's obvious that he knew, that he would allow this to take place. and let it go on for so long without doing anything about it. And apparently he did. But it is what it is. God rest his soul. We can't throw dirt on his tomb because he's passed away. And it is what it, like I said, it is what it is. And we'll know in about when football season starts. We'll know what the true fate of Mr. Jerry Sandusky is. Like I said, his max that he can get is 442 years. We'll see what happens when the verdict comes out in September. Anyway, I spent about a half hour on that, and let's move on. As you know, that the I gave Elsa some statistics last week about yesterday about one Mr. the chosen one, the king. Self-proclaimed, crowned king of basketball, the chosen one of basketball. We're talking about LeBron James, who has gotten a lot of criticism, who has been dogged unmercifully since he made, in quote, the decision last year and decided to take his talents, as he says, to South Beach. Well, LeBron, you got lambasted, toasted, roasted, and fried all last year, especially the way you played in the finals. You got to the finals. Got to give it to you that. Your boys, Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade, and you got to the finals with the rest of the team in Miami Heat. Didn't play that well. Got beat by Dallas. And then you come back. And then you're able to get to the finals again. No one gave you really a chance. You were getting dogged out unmercifully, like I said, for a whole year getting back to this point. Didn't think that you would be able to get over the hump with the vaunted young guns out of the west of the Oklahoma City Thunder, meaning Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden, but you proved us wrong. You scored roughly about 30 a game, roughly about 7 or 8 rebounds, give or take a game, and same amount of assists. So you almost averaged a triple-double each game in the finals, but you capped that off with a triple-double in the final game to cap the winning the MVP, and quite naturally winning the NBA title. Now, I had gave some numbers. Someone had told me that it's good that you won. It's great that you won, but in his opinion, there's an asterisk there because the fact is it was 66 games that you played versus 82. So you didn't play a full season. So it's got to be a little asterisk on a blockout short season versus a full season, several people tell me, show me if you can do it in a full season, then you'll get you should earn it from them, but you'll get the just due and respect from more people. And quite naturally, I agree, and I can agree and disagree on the same point. I know that's being wishy-washy. I know that's being like, you know, come on, you got to take a stand. Well, I'm taking this stand. In my opinion, LeBron James stepped up to the plate. Like one said, he took off his dress, he took off his skirt, and he put on his big boy's pants, and he brought his what he proclaimed he was. He brought that game into the finals and did his thing like he was supposed to do for years. And he finally had what I think a defining moment, meaning He got to the promised land. He won a championship. I think LeBron James has arrived finally. I mean, not that he hadn't arrived before, but I think this is, like I said, his defining moment. And I think he's finally got his act together, and I see big things. As long as these three can stay together, and Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra can add more pieces or better pieces around them, because I don't think some of these pieces that help win, especially Mike Miller, I think he's about done because he could barely get on the court. And if you had read the press conference from Eric Spoelstra, he only planned on playing Mike Miller 3 to 5 minutes, if that, because he didn't think he could go as long as he went. But Mike Miller was unconscious. 7 3-pointers in a game, he was unconscious. So he had to play him as long as he had to ride the horse, as long as he could stand up on him. So I have some numbers here that I read yesterday. I want to read again today because I think they're a good comparison. And I just ask that you bear with me for here and see how James fares against his airness at this point in his career. All right, and his airness is Michael Jordan. Okay, Michael Jordan played 15 years in the league. Right now, to this point, LeBron James has played 9. LeBron James will be is 27, soon to be 28. His birthday is December 30th. So come the end of this year, he'll be 28 years old. So he 28. You figure he's got at least maybe 5 more years, 6 more years left in him. Depending on how well his body holds up. So, Michael Jordan, quite naturally, well, you know, Michael Jordan's got six rings. He's got 6 championships. LeBron, right now, as you know, he has 1. He just finally got his 1. Jordan's career points per game was 30.1. LeBron's 27.6. Total career points, Jordan played longer, so he's going to have more. Not necessarily, but more likely he's going to have more, and he does. 32,292 points, and he's third of all time. LeBron, 19,045 points, and he's 47th of all time. So career rebounds per game, Jordan 6.2. LeBron is 7.2. So at one point, he gets one more rebound than Jordan does. Total career rebounds. Now, understand, like I keep on telling you, LeBron has only played 9 years and Jordan's played 15. Jordan has 6,672 rebounds. LeBron, 4,943. Career assists per game. Jordan was a decent passer, but LeBron is a better passer passing the ball. Quite naturally, he's done that quite a bit and has been ridiculed for it, especially at crunch time, especially when a time when he should be taking a shot, he passes it off. He's done a lot. Not saying that this is the reason why he has 6.9 assists per game compared to Jordan, who only has 5.3 assists per game. Total career assists. Now, Jordan's played longer, but I see LeBron catching him very quickly before he gets to his 15th year like Jordan did. Jordan has 5,633 assists. LeBron has 4,751 assists. So if he averages, let me see now, he got, that's about 900 assists difference. Over the next 5 years, he could possibly pass Jordan in 5 years with less years in the league. LeBron's only had a scoring title one time. Jordan, out of 15 years, had it 10 times. Michael Jordan had the MVP, the NBA MVP, 5 times. LeBron's already had it 3 times. So there's a strong possibility that LeBron has played nearly half the amount of years that his heirness, Michael Jordan, has played, is going to surpass Jordan in the MVP as long as he sustains his level of play as it is right now. He's got 3. He's only need 2 more to be able to not that it's easy to do that, but he's going to need 2 more to tie Michael Jordan. Now this is something that I don't think LeBron's going to be able to do, but he may. Michael's had 6 rings. He's got 6 NBA titles. Every time he's got a title, he's won the MVP, the NBA Finals MVP. LeBron won his title, and he's won the MVP for winning that title. Michael Jordan was the third pick in the first round. Everyone knows that LeBron was the first pick in the first round. Michael Jordan was a 1985. Man, that's a long, that's 27 years ago. Michael Jordan was the Rookie of the Year in 1985. LeBron, Rookie of the Year 2004. All-Star appearances. Michael Jordan, 15 years in the league. Only 1 year he wasn't in the All-Star game. 14 times he was an All-Star. He appeared in the All-Star game. LeBron, 9 years in the league. 8 years he appeared in the All-Star game. All NBA first team, Michael Jordan 10 times, LeBron James 6 times. NBA All Defensive first team, 9 times for Michael Jordan, 4 times for LeBron James. NBA All-Star game MVP, 15 years in the league. Now this is amazing now. His heirness, 15 years in the league, and I don't think this is a big statistic to worry about or to make a big deal about. Michael Jordan played 15 years in the league. Like I said, he only won 3 MVP awards in the All-Star game. LeBron James has won 2. I can see LeBron James winning another one or 2 or 3. It's a strong possibility that he will win that, but it is what it is. All right. I'm just putting that out there. I'm not a big LeBron James supporter. I think he did a hell of a job in helping being the main person to win the NBA title. But we'll see what happens next year. The NBA season is now over. We're talking about baseball and football that's happening right now. I happen to be in a fantasy baseball league, which this is the first year. I'm a rookie at it. This is the first year. The 10-team league, head-to-head. It's a 24 roster team. You can configure it any way. You got let me tell you about this thing here. You can configure your roster basically any way you want, except for the specific format that you have to follow players on your team. You go through a draft. I went through a draft. This is all new to me. And for those who don't know, Vic Gardner, who happens to be the normal host on the FSP show, which is on Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, he started the FSP show, and I shortly after after a couple, 2-3 months after you started, I became his co-host, and we've been co-hosting or on shows for 3 or 4 years now. Off that broke out, excuse me, I suggested to him I'd like to start another show, and that was born the FSP Cruise Show, which is going into its second year. In fact, it's past its second year. It's been going well. We're enjoying it quite a bit. And then from there, I had told him I wanted to do a show today. And I picked the time at 10 a.m. to 11, specifically for the time when fantasy football rolls around. And for you, all you listeners out there looking for fantasy football advice, which I am a big fantasy football type of guy, to set your lineups, to look to the next week, next waiver week or whatever, look at certain players. So besides the information that I put out on Thursday, which is before Sunday's game, so the information I put out on Sunday, which is before Saturday's games or Sunday's games, I give you a last minute advice, a last minute way to pick up somebody. Maybe they happen to be on a waiver wire or whatever, and you can pick them up put them in your lineup at the last minute, and you can possibly win that week against your opponent. The reason I'm saying this is I think, in my opinion, I'm a pretty good evaluator of talent, especially running backs. I have won championships this past season, and I've won championships in past seasons, money and free leagues. I have been on these shows, people, and this is if you go back to the archives, you'll know what I'm talking about and see what I speak is the truth. On these shows, in the past, before they broke out, before anyone knew who they were, I first brought to light Jamaal Charles. I was laughed at on several shows, especially on a Saturday show. Didn't know who I was talking about. But I preached Jamaal Charles when Larry Johnson was on the Kansas City Chiefs and was taking up all the carries and not doing anything. I'm preaching to the highest, like whoever would listen, that Jamaal Charles is the back to have. I picked up Jamaal Charles in fifth and sixth rounds of several drafts, and Jamaal Charles broke out the year that he came on the scene, the first came on the scene, and I forget the year it was. It was 2 years ago, 2 to 3 years ago. And now everybody's talking about Jamaal Charles, and at the time they wonder where he came from. Well, I turned around and did the same thing again the following season. And you know who I talked about? No one was talking about at the time. It was none other than number 23 from the Houston Texans, Arian Foster. Yes, people, on this show, I guarantee you, on this show, I called out Arian Foster before the so-called experts jumped on him and said, this is the guy. Who is it going to be this year? Who is it going to be this year? Well, you have to tune in starting on July 15th, which is two Sundays from now, if I'm not mistaken. I'll be talking about running backs that are going to be breaking out, that I do believe are going to be breaking out, are going to surprise people. That I'm not talking about running backs that you get in the first and second round or third round. I'm talking about running backs that are going to break out, that are going to surprise people, that you're going to be getting in the fifth, sixth rounds, fourth rounds. You're going to be getting real good value for your draft. I do believe I can do it again. I've got a track record. Now, it's not foolproof, but I have a track record. I have one guy in mind right at the top of my head right now that I believe is going to surprise people, and he's not going to be picked up in the average 12-team league. He's not going to get picked up in the first round. He's not going to get picked up in the second round. He's not going to get picked up in the third round. He may get picked up in the fourth round. More than likely, it's going to be the fifth, sixth, and further down the line that he'll be picked up. And he'll be picked up in most leagues as an afterthought. Well, I'll be targeting this guy in many leagues, because I do believe this guy is going to have a surprising season, because I think the team that he's with is going to utilize him more than the so-called experts expect him to be utilized. So stay tuned for that. Even though I play in a lot of leagues that people listen to, even though I play in a lot of leagues that my co-hosts play in, I'm very confident of – I name these players, my co-hosts, guys that listen to the show that have listened to what I've said, have picked up players ahead of me in drafts, which is fine, because I'm very confident, especially in running backs, of being able to identify a running back that's going to perform sometime extremely well during the NFL season in fantasy. I do believe that if you hang with me throughout the year, I can definitely give you players, running backs and wide receivers that are going to benefit you, that are not on the grid, not well-known players, not well-known picks for a lot of people, but their upside and their potential is about to hit, and it's up to you to grab them when you're told to grab them, you may have to wait out a week, you may have to wait out 2 weeks, or they may explode the week that you pick them up. But I'm very confident I can help you win your fantasy week, and even help you win a fantasy championship if you hang with me. If you stick with me and listen to what I'm telling you, nothing's foolproof, nothing's 100%, but every bit of information that you get you one step closer. If it's good information, get you one step closer to a fantasy set championship. That if you like to play fantasy football, I love playing fantasy football. I love the competition. I love to talk a lot of smack. People that are in my league always know that they're going to hear from me. Always know that I'm going to post something on the league page talking smack to my opponent, talking smack to the league, because that's how I roll. I like to talk a lot of smack. Sometimes it hits me in the face, but that's fine. It's all about fun. It's all about having a good time and having good time in the competition, and that's what I like to do. 58 years old, and I've still got a lot left in me, and I enjoy what I do. I enjoy talking on the air. I enjoy I enjoy conversation with people on the air. I enjoy talking smack to people. I enjoy competition. I love my main sport is football. I love football. I love to watch football and fantasy football, which I've been in for quite a few years now. I love the competition. All right. That's me bantering on and on and on. And like I said, the number to call in, you got 6 minutes left in this, a little more than 5 minutes left. 347-637-3220. You got something to say real quick? I'll listen to you. You got a question or a comment? I'll listen to that, or I'll answer your question if you have it. It's no problem. No subject is off limits. I'll deal with any subject that you want to jump on. I talked about Sandusky for quite a while. I talked about LeBron for a little bit, I was talking about a little about a fantasy football. I just got off the air with the host of the FSP show on Saturday, Victor Gardner, and he was telling me that he had jumped in two 20-team leagues. One of them was an auction, which I don't like auction leagues, and like he complained about, they take too long. The draft takes too long because play-by-play, and especially when you have a 40-team, when you have a big roster, it's a 20-team. So you know that's going to last a long time, even if it's a regular draft. Now with an auction draft, it's going to drag on out even that much more longer. So, but the draft in mid-June, that's tough. I did that once when I was three or four years ago. I'll never do it again. For the simple fact is, you draft all these players, you have no idea what they're doing in direct training camp. You hope they don't get hurt in training camp or in the preseason, the exhibition games. And then you're stuck with them. If they get hurt, especially when you have a 20-team league, you're stuck with those players. If no one wants to trade with you, especially if your player gets hurt, you're stuck. My opinion, you don't draft. You do not do a draft until sometime in August when you start to see who's doing what in training camp and you'll start to see who's doing what in preseason games. You get a better idea. Now, quite naturally, unfortunately, sometimes and a lot of times it happens. It's going to happen. Guys get hurt in preseason games. You can't do anything about that. But at least you have a better idea of who's got the ability to benefit you on your fantasy football team versus doing a draft early in June or in July. August is the best time to do a fantasy draft. August and if possible, you do it the day before the game start. The first game starts on Thursday. So you do the Sunday before the first game starts. So you have the best amount of information and the most amount of information that you could possibly have to benefit you. Because even though you may have friends in the league, it's all about competition. It's all about you getting the best advantage for you to be able to win that week, win your conference, or win that league. You can win the championship, whether it's for free, for bragging rights, or for winning money. Now, if it's a money league, in my opinion, in the money league, it's doggy dog. You can have friends, you can laugh and joke, but you don't give away valuable information. We'll get into that a little further down the line, starting in July, and when things start heating up fantasy-wise. I want to thank you listening. Without you listeners listening here, there is no me. I appreciate you listening to me. Banter on for this past hour. Tune in next week, same time, same bat station. I'll be here 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time for an hour. And then this Tuesday will be the Compassion Dakini with Kim Fun. Different pace, totally different type of style show than what we run on the other shows. She brings a new perspective to what life is about. 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 1 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. And then on Thursday, the FSP Cruise Show. That's the crew. I'm the host of the crew. And then I also have Black the Bookie and Jeff the Joker. I think we'll be talking about the NBA draft on Thursday. This show, we should have maybe a correspondent in the draft room talking about the draft. On Friday, we have Mac Williams, who's the host, and me, the co-host, on No Chaser Show, which starts at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on Friday night. And then on Saturday, would be the FSP show, the mothership, the home show. And that'll be 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And I'll be hosting that because Vic is en route back to the States. He's coming home. He's finally coming home. And it's none too soon, in my opinion. And I know how he feels and his family feels. So I want to thank all you listeners that have been listening to me banter on for an hour. It's been a pleasure. Enjoy your week. Enjoy what brings you to all this. And remember, I'll be back next week with some more news and notes. Take care. Enjoy a solid day while we walk out of here. See you.